Gaucho Land Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today is our first podcast after the season ended in Serie A. We're recording this on Monday, releasing this on Tuesday. It's a holiday here in the U.S. So we're going to recap a really wild weekend in Serie A, especially Sunday afternoon. It's been a lot of changes at Milan. Right before we recorded, there's the news that both Leonardo and Gattuso are leaving. So we'll discuss that at the top. We have our winners and losers segment. And then we're going to get into some transfer stuff with our dear friend Emre from Turkish Football. Really insightful interviews on a few Turkish players that are going to be in the transfer headlines. Then we're going to get to your Twitter questions, almost all relating on transfers. A bonus section for our patrons, and we're going to close by reviewing Milan's season with our friend Matt Santangelo. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, the co-host, the producer of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, the season ended in Serie A. We had Juve and Napoli go to the Champions League. That we knew yesterday. Really exciting last set of games, but Atalanta and Inter made it through. At the beginning of the season, we predicted three out of these four. We had Milan as the fourth. So with Atalanta in, based on what we saw this season, would you say the four best teams in Serie A ended up qualifying for the Champions League or not?
Yes, I absolutely do, David. And I'm not just being a prisoner of the moment here because Atalanta have now finished third. No, I thought for quite some time Atalanta were playing one of the better brands of football in the league. And I even talked about it a while ago about their goal differential. And I understand goal differential is not the most important thing here, or else goal differential would be more important than points. But the top four teams in goal differential in order are the top four teams in the standings in order. Juventus, first in goal differential, first in the league. Napoli, second in goal differential, second in the league. Atalanta, third in goal differential, third in the league. And Inter, fourth in goal differential, fourth in the league. And Atalanta had a plus 31 goal differential, seven more than Inter. So get out of here, in my opinion, if you don't think Atalanta was one of the top four teams, because they were. They absolutely were. And another thing that I like to base all of this off of is away form. Anybody can kind of play good at home. Let's be real. Even bad teams can have a good home performance because they feel more comfortable. But I put a lot of stock into how do you play on the road? How are you as an away team? And in terms of points collected on the road, once again, it was these four. It was Juventus with the most points on the road, Napoli with the second most points on the road, Atalanta with the third most points on the road, and Inter with the fourth most points. So, yes, I'm not basing this all off goal differential and away form, but I do think those are very important. And just overall, I do think these were the top four teams in Serie A this season. They were deserving of getting these Champions League spots. So that's my opinion, David. What about you?
The goal differential, certainly very interesting. You know, I'm not a big stat guy, but I do think that one did say something pretty interesting. Look, I thought Inter, for most of the season, were closer to Napoli than Napoli was to Juve. Point-wise, that ended up being the case, but Inter, in typical Inter fashion, made it interesting literally until the very last second of the season. I still think when I look at their squad, overall how they played this season, I do think they deserve to make it. I think it's very hard to find anyone that would be making a case against Atalanta because of the way they played. I know we've talked about it on the podcast. I think the fact that Atalanta, their last two home games were played in a neutral field, and the last one was against Sassuolo, so almost basically another away match. They went deep in the Coppa Italia. They beat Juve. Atalanta was very impressive against the top teams. So to me, it did. I know Milan came just short, and there's a lot of changes coming to Milan. And I know Inter had some uninspiring matches, but I think Milan, there were really some stretches which were really pretty poor. I think the derby where Inter beat Milan in a lot of ways ended up being maybe the decisive difference between the two. It really changed course for Milan. They did get a little bit back on track at the end with a good streak. So at the end of the day, I do think the best teams in Serie A are going to the Champions League. I know a lot of people are concerned with Atalanta, how they're going to do in the Champions League. Are they going to sell a lot of players? Gasperini going to leave? Like, look, you know, Milan, had they qualified, would have had financial fair play, you know, restrictions. We've seen Roma, who sold a lot of players, make a deep run in the Champions League. You just never know. Now, all the Serie A teams in the pots in the Champions League for the draw, we have Juve in the first one, Napoli in the second, Inter in third, and Atalanta in the fourth. I'm pretty sure Milan would have been in the fourth anyway. I don't see a huge difference there, and I think it's great that Atalanta was rewarded for the way they played, the ambition of the club. They're refurbishing their stadium now. So I think at the end of the day, things broke out the way they should have.
So, David, you've alluded to the end of the Serie A season. It wasn't boring. It was not boring. So what did you make of the last set of matches in Serie A?
Wow. I think in a lot of ways it was the exact opposite of Game of Thrones as a series. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast. This was not a good season in Serie A overall, on and off the pitch. It was pretty hard. You know, there really weren't that many great storylines. Yeah, there was suspense definitely for the Champions League spot, some implications there. Also in the race till the very end, also in the race to avoid relegation. It was exciting till the very end. But we really had no title race, a lot of off-field situations that definitely weren't fun to cover for us on the podcast. But I think on the last day, it really delivered both in the race to avoid relegation and Champions League. The fact that Inter and Empoli were involved in both, Milan having a win in Ferrara against Spal and delivering on that made it really, really exciting. At halftime, we had Milan in the Champions League and not Inter. And that last match was really bonkers. Like, we talk a lot about Pazza Inter, but that game was really something else. I would say the last 25 minutes, if you have yet to watch that match, if you're casually listening now to get to the transfer stuff, like, do yourself a favor. There was just really so much that could have happened. So to me, it was really the opposite of Game of Thrones. It was a great series with a really bad ending. I thought Serie A was diametrically the opposite. We certainly had a lot of excitement there for sure. We're going to get to it a little bit more, to the winners and losers. So at least Serie A ended on a plus. I think if you're in the United States also, the ESPN app has made it so much better to follow Serie A. And I think for the last match of the season, to say that that app was in clutch is an understatement. So very well done. Congrats to everyone at ESPN.
Yeah, I 1,000% echo that. Well said, David. Now, let's get to some pretty big post-Serie A season news, and it's pretty fresh. Leonardo and Gattuso are no longer at Milan. Are you surprised by that? And what does that say, David, about the overall direction of the club?
I got to say I'm mildly surprised. I mean, it's really amazing, the turnover at Milan. So I'll say I'm more surprised than you told me at the beginning of the season. Both Leonardo and Gattuso, I would have been very surprised. I mean, now Milan, it's going to be their new sporting director, whoever it is, and it sounds like it's going to be Lille's director, Campos, as an outside consultant with another figure coming in, which sounds kind of an odd structure. So they're going to have, for the fourth year in a row, a different person in charge of their transfer market moves. They're going to have their seventh coach in 8 years. So really a lot of turnover. Now, I think getting rid of Gattuso, as much as I like them, was probably the right thing to do. I don't think there was really much upside with him. Sure, even if we don't know who the replacement is, I think odds are they can bring someone that at least has an offensive philosophy. Leonardo, surprising to say the least, but I think in a lot of ways, when Gazidis came in from Arsenal, things started to change a little bit. Now, granted, Leonardo was given a lot of money, spent a lot of money in January, and this was despite the financial fair play things. So the way I see it, it felt like Leonardo got his chance 1 year to do things his way. Once they didn't make the Champions League, Milan's going to have to go in a different direction. Now they don't have the revenue from the Champions League. They are going to have to go in the direction of young players, trying to make plusvalenza, capital gains, bring in players, sell them for more to get out of this financial fair play situation. So definitely, I think it's hard not to put it as a significant setback for Milan. So I really see it as Leonardo got his chance to do things his way. Now the Elliott Fund and Gazzidis, who's coming from Arsenal, are going to do things more their way. So a lot of uncertainty there. At the end of the podcast, you're going to hear an interview with Matt Santangelo. I would like to point out that that interview was recorded before the news. So take it, you know, in that context. But I want to ask you, Alex, we've talked a lot about Gattuso this season. Granted, he came just short. We know we've talked a lot on the podcast on all the turbulence that he dealt with this season. Are you surprised by the decision to get rid of him?
No, not surprised, David, because I do feel like the writing was on the wall. And at the end of the day, Milan, whether they're justifiably there or not, the standard, the expectation now is to be back among Serie A's best. And it really looked like for a good portion of the season in the middle, they were getting there. And Gattuso was getting a lot of credit for it, I think. I think he was finally getting credit for it because I kept saying it. A lot of the players that were contributing, he didn't even have in preseason. So I do think it was a good managerial job, but I feel like that was saving his job at the time. I feel like that was really, it was impressive from him, and it was impressive from Milan as a whole and from the players, of course. But I feel like that was literally keeping him on anyway. So considering the way it all ended, not surprised at all. Because, David, it goes back to the saying, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And man, if the finish was that middle of the season, I think he would still be at Milan. But considering how it all ended and missing out on Champions League football, no, not surprised. I'm really not. So, David, we've now talked a little bit about the Serie A weekend, but there was even more to it. So, like we do every time post Serie A weekend, let's do winners and losers. Our last winners and losers for this Serie A season, of course. Who do we got for episode 223 of the Calcioland podcast?
So let's start with our friend Thousand Names, who went 4-for-4 with his prediction on the final weekend in Serie A, and even predicted Kess, at least the goal by Kessie. So shout out to Thousand Names. I really do like getting some notes, even of some Juve fans that are starting to get his sense of humor a little bit more. And then we had, although Napoli lost, we had Mertens score another goal. He's been red hot to end the season. He continues to say he wants to keep playing at Napoli to get the record for goals scored. But really a nice ending to the season after a difficult start for him. In that match, we also had Bologna striker Santander scored 2 goals off headers, which is his specialty. I thought he had a pretty good first season in Serie A. He missed some time with injuries, ends up with 8 goals with no PKs. So a player that could be pretty interesting for Bologna next season. And then that incredible match between Inter and Empoli. Big hero was Handanovic. I find it, you know, really interesting that Handanovic, Inter's new captain, ended up bailing out Inter's former captain, Icardi, who missed that penalty, which could have really sealed the deal for Inter. And then Handanovic saved the day, had really an outstanding match. Handanovic had been named the best keeper in Serie A by the league. It was really based on stats. I didn't agree with that decision, but I think in the final match, he was absolutely incredible. Then we had D'Ambrosio, who had, I don't even know how to describe it, a deflection off, he tried to stop a goal, the deflection off him hit the bar. Really an incredible moment towards the end of the match. D'Ambrosio has been very solid this season, definitely Inter's best wing back. So in a way, it's fitting that he saved the day right at the end. Also very fitting when you think of the craziness of the Serie A season. Maybe not so many great stories. Nainggolan involved with the Zaniolo deal, that he scores the goal to bring Inter back to the Champions League. We also had Kita Balde, who made an impact in that match. both by scoring and also by in an incident where he tried to stop Empoli goalkeeper Dragowski. You really saw so many crazy things in that match. On the flip side, we want to give a lot of credit to Empoli. They played really well once their manager Andrea Zolli came back. He had been sacked and replaced by Iacchini. I thought Empoli more than held their own at San Siro. Also, their goalkeeper Dragowski, once again, sensational. It was really interesting because Fiorentina, who really needed Empoli to lose, are the ones that loaned out Dragowski to Empoli in January. So his performances could have almost really backfired for Fiorentina. On the bright side for Fiorentina, they did sign Empoli midfielder Traore in January. He's expected to join them in the summer. He had a really strong end to the season. Then also shout out to Frank Kessie, who had a strong performance in the last match of the season for Milan. Then we go to Atalanta, who had Zapata scoring his 23rd goal of the season, only one off penalty. If you look at the race for the top striker in Serie A, if you take away penalties, he's the one with the most goals. We also had a very strong performance by Papu Gomez against Sassuolo to get them to the Champions League. And then we want to talk about De Rossi's last match for Roma that ends up with a win. I thought that was really moving what happened at the Olimpico. I thought Roma did a great job. The fans, the moment was really, really well done, having Totti and Bruno Conti on the field with him. I thought also Ranieri. Look, he didn't get them to the Champions League. He did improve Roma quite a bit, but I thought it was more than fitting and really quite perfect that he was Roma's manager for De Rossi's last match. We know what a big fan he is at Roma. He also got a lot of appreciation from the fans there. We also want to give a shout out to our friends at Roma's social media team. Really outstanding work. They did this initiative to bring a fan from Nigeria, Mark Orabar, who I really want to interview on our podcast. If you followed it on social media, really a beautiful moment. Really what a treat for that fan to also be there for De Rossi's last match. We also want to give a highlight to Quagliarella, who finished the season as the top striker with 26. Pavoletti scored another goal, improving his season best season total in his career to 16. Flip side, the losers has to be Mauro Icardi, the top one. He gets the start over Lautaro Martinez in the key match of the season, falls short with the penalty. You could really feel him ostracized from the fans. I still think there's a pretty decent chance he stays at Inter because I really believe that right now he's really an asset that has lost too much value. We know he doesn't want to leave, so an interesting situation there. Another loser is Dalbert, who came off the bench and was absolutely disastrous. He was trying, as Spalletti was trying to shore up the defense by bringing him in, and he was truly disastrous. And the flip side to Empoli's outstanding performance at San Siro, although they lost, is Genoa and Fiorentina really doing a pure Biscotto match. They were basically following what was going on at the match at San Siro to make sure that Empoli would lose. They weren't trying at all. So that was really kind of the opposite of the way Empoli played. And last but not least, I have to put as a loser Roma president Pallotta for not being there for De Rossi's last match. I think it would have been really important. I know he's been criticized a lot for it, but sometimes you have to be present for a moment like that. I think him not being there definitely raises some eyebrows. So now let's now that we've reviewed Serie A, let's start talking a little bit about transfers. You're going to hear a lot of guests in the coming weeks coming on to discuss transfers, rumors on different players. And I wanted to start with our friend Emre from Turkish Football. There's a lot of surprisingly Turkish players linked to Serie A, so I think you'll find the interview quite interesting. So I'm very excited with the Serie A season ending on Sunday. We are going to pivot and start talking more and more about transfers. So we are going to have guests that are more focused on transfers. We'll bring back our usual Serie A guests here and there, but I'm very excited to welcome back our friend Emre Sarıgül. You guys know him as Turkish Football on Twitter. We've had him on the podcast a few times before, but there are quite a few intriguing Turkish players linked to Serie A, so I wanted to bring Emre back. So Emre, it's a real pleasure to welcome you back to Calcioland.
Thanks very much.
Okay, Emre. So there's a few topics that I wanted to talk to you about, but let's start with the player that really brought you on my radar. And I think the first time we had you on the podcast a while back was to discuss Cengiz Under, who you've been tweeting about recently. So he just completed his second season in Serie A at Roma. So I want to ask you, would you say the market for Under has changed a lot compared to this time last year? Or do you see some of the same teams, a similar valuation for potential transfer fee being the same? Or do you think things have changed for him?
Well, the main problem Cengiz has had this year is his injury record. That's really held him back a bit. But other than that, we're in pretty much the same situation as from the last time we spoke. What's going on is his representatives want a new deal because he's one of the lowest paid players in the Roma squad.
Yeah.
For a player of his position, for his a player of his status in the team. So he's only on around 1 million per year, and he has another 3 years left on his current deal. So what they have always wanted was for his pay to be increased. Roma haven't been looking to play ball so far because they've been looking to cash in. They got a pretty good deal for him when they signed him from here. So he's got a lot of interest, and they're weighing up whether it's worth selling him now or offering the new deal. And obviously there's financial fair play which comes into play, and the fact that Roma are probably going to be in a bit of trouble for not getting Champions League football.
Yeah.
So, in regards to the teams that are interested, Arsenal and Tottenham have scouted in quite a lot. And there's obviously the Bayern Munich link, which has been rumbling on for the past few months. So, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. In terms of his price, Roma did want between 40 to 50 million euros, and that was back in January. I mean, whether he's still got a few years on his contract, so they hold all the cards right now. If they could keep him on, give him a new deal with a better wage packet, or try to move him on this summer, the way it's looking is he's probably going to leave. But they haven't ruled out staying. So it's right now everything's up in the air. Nobody knows quite what the future holds for Cengiz. But that's the main situation that he's got.
Very interesting. Let's see what happens once Roma brings in their new sporting directors, Petracchi from Torino. And that's going to be definitely a situation worth keeping an eye on. So now I wanted to ask you next about Victor Moses. So I know there's been a lot of contradicting reports on Victor Moses. So I know you wrote extensively about him recently. Just completed a season at Fenerbahce. He's been linked to Inter now that it looks that Conte is going to be the next manager. There's also been talk that Chelsea could bring him back. So give us a little bit of an assessment on what you think is going to happen with Victor Moses. And to start with, how would you say his season was at Fenerbahce?
Victor Moses had a pretty decent season at Fenerbahce. It's worth remembering he joined in January, and Fenerbahce are in a bit of a transition right now. They had a very disappointing season by their high standards, and he was one of the better players in the second half of the season. Wasn't breathtaking, wasn't amazing, but neither was the team. And that reflects in their league position. But with regards to the transfer story, a lot of this is a case of being lost in translation. Because what actually happened is there was a report in Turkey which said that they said Victor Moses spoke in confidence to his friends, and they reported what he apparently said. I mean, unless they had a voice recorder, I don't see how they know what he's saying in private. But anyway, what happened is those quotes were taken as if Victor Moses said them himself, and they were printed in England and Italy, and the sources weren't attributed correctly. So we have a situation of these sources, these quotes, which Victor Moses didn't actually say, being passed as his comments that he wants to leave. So, I mean, I've spoke to the club about what's actually going on. And as far as they're concerned, of course, Victor Moses holds Antonio Conte in very high regard. He makes no secret of that.
Yeah.
He had a great time with him at Chelsea. He really put him on the map. So he loves the manager. He thinks he's one of probably the best manager he's ever worked with. But in terms of the transfer, they say there's been no offer from Inter, no contact, in fact. And, I mean, he does have another 12 months left on his loan with Fenerbahce. But the thing is, the interesting thing is, Chelsea, they do have a callback clause in his contract, but they can't call him back if they're going to play him at Chelsea. So the only way they can call him back is if they sell him. So
interesting.
If Chelsea want to cash in on Victor Moses, they're going to have to find a bidder, which is possible. So, I mean, if they do find someone willing to pay money, they can call him back. But Victor Moses has to agree to this. So it's a pretty complicated contract situation. But that's really the stem of the rumor and what's going on. So as it stands, there is no offer. He's happy at Fenerbahce, but he does love Conte. And if there was an offer, there is the possibility he could leave, depending on himself, if he wants to leave.
Very, very interesting, especially with Conte, who's going to be announced probably this week as Inter's new manager, but it's really just a matter of time. So let's go from a player who could potentially come to Serie A to one who is already in Serie A and who's been doing really, really well since arriving at Sassuolo. And this is center back Demiral, who Juve worked with Sassuolo on bringing him to Serie A. They didn't have a non-EU slot available, so they worked with Sassuolo. And I think, I don't know if they'll bring him back to Turin soon, but they kind of a bit control his destiny. So let me ask you, since you're someone who watched him play, were you surprised at how well he did in Serie A? I mean, Sassuolo isn't, you know, the sexiest team, but anyone who follows the league closely has only had good things to say about him. So have you been surprised by how well he's done in Serie A? And how would you describe him to someone who's maybe not that familiar with him?
I haven't actually been surprised at all. I think he's a very, very underrated player. He's flown under the radar for a long time. I mean, Merit Demiral is a beast of a defender. He's 192 meters tall, very physical, very good in the air. He's also a threat on set pieces. He scored a few goals for the team from corners and free kicks. Good with his feet for a player of his size. Pretty decent technically, good with the ball. He's an all-round, very, very good player. And, I mean, he's always been ruthless throughout his career. When I first saw him, he was in the Fenerbahce, a youth team. And it was a huge surprise that he left them and he went to the Portuguese third division. And nobody could understand his rationale. I mean, they were thinking, why would you leave one of the biggest Turkey to go to the third division in Portugal? But he always had his mindset on playing first team football and he knew he wasn't going to get that at his current club. So he went there, he impressed, and before long, Sporting Lisbon snapped him up. Sporting Lisbon loaned him to Alanya Sport last summer, where he was brilliant for the first half of the season. Then he went to Italy. So, I mean, he's always gone to clubs where he's played and he's done this deliberately. He's always made it a big thing to join teams where he's a first-team player. And I think that's really helped accelerate his development because he has all the raw attributes to be a great defender. But I think one of the big problems is with young players. If you're not playing, that talent can go to waste. So he's taken his talent and he's moved his game up to a much higher level. And I think he's one of the highest, one of the biggest talents in Turkish football right now.
Very, very interesting. So Juve fans, keep an eye on him. I don't know if he'll be on the club next season, but maybe down the road, this could be someone that can help rebuild Juve's defense. So I want to ask you about a player, which I'm going to be honest, I've never seen play, but I'm going to tell you just because Napoli is linked to him, I'm intrigued because they have a great track record when it comes to looking to players abroad. And this is, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name, Ilgaf Elmas. I know he's been linked also to other clubs as well. So tell us a little bit how you would describe him and where you potentially see him going.
Well, Ilgaf Elmas is the diamond of this Fenerbahce team right now. And I say diamond because his surname Elmas actually means diamond in Turkish.
Okay.
So he's a very, very talented player. He's a central midfielder, but he plays a more attacking role. He's very good with his feet, very technical, a great passer of the ball. He likes to get into the final third. He also has great vision and creativity for a player of his age. So I can see why so many clubs are interested. And the list is very extensive for the amount of clubs which have been scouted in this season. I mean, like you said, the Napoli interest is very serious. Inter as well. Mm. I know I've been informed that Inter are very serious about him. They're very keen. They've been scouting him. And also there's Lazio. With regards to the other clubs, Tottenham scouted him 3 to 4 times this season, and Arsenal have as well. But what I would say is Italy is his likely destination. The Italian clubs have shown far more interest and a willingness to actually play him at some stage if they were to sign him. And one reason I'd say he is likely to leave if offers come in that are attractive is that Fenerbahce have to sell because they're in a bit of trouble financially with financial fair play. So if an offer comes in, they're going to have to sell it in order to balance the books and buy players themselves this summer. So I'd say watch Ilgaf Elmas very closely. He could leave for Italy pretty soon.
I'm excited because usually financial fair play doesn't work well for Italian teams. They're usually the ones that have to sell. So this is one time it could work in our favor. So I'm completely good for this. So Emre, I really appreciated you filled me in on the questions that I had. Now I want to leave it more open-ended. You cover, you know, league football that I'm not that familiar with, and that's why I'm so glad to have you as a resource. So anyone, you know, follow Emre at Turkish_football1. You guys can read it. I'm on Guardian, Bleacher Report. His Twitter account is great. So now I want to leave it open-ended. Tell our listeners about maybe other Turkish players or other things that we should keep an eye out now during the summer of the transfer window.
What I would say is keep an eye on the younger players because there's a transition right now in Turkish football towards teams finally giving young players a chance. It wasn't the case a few years ago, but because of financial fair play, they're not able to sign players in their mid-30s, and pay them astronomical wages anymore. So what they have to do now is play the players that they have in their academies, which, funnily enough, are actually pretty good because Turkey has a huge population, 80 million. Football is the number one sport. And the age group is the average age of the country is very young. So, to an outsider, it looks like a missed goal. But they finally wisened up to it. And what I would say is, there are a few players who are very, very exciting right now. One of them got Trabzonspor called Abdulkadir Ömür. He's 19 years old, an attacking midfielder, also a winger. He plays attacking roles out wide. He's very, very talented. A similar style of player to Cengiz Ünder, and I know a lot of clubs are looking at him, so he's one to keep a close eye on. And there's a player at Lille called Mehmet Zeki Çelik, who moved from the second tier of Turkish football to Lille, established himself as a first-team player, played pretty much started most of the games this season. And this is another one for your listeners. There's a lot of interest in him from Italy. And his people are saying if he does leave, it would probably be to Italy. There's a lot of interest there. And to wrap things up, I'd say there's a lot of value right now in young Turkish players. The reason being is obviously, firstly, the Turkish lira is a lot weaker to the euro. And secondly, the market isn't established in Turkey. So there's still value there. Say you sign a player from Argentina or Brazil, they've got that made in Argentina, made in Brazil brand already. That adds value to their name. That doesn't exist in Turkey. So I think especially the Italian clubs have wisened up to this reality that there is quite a lot of talent right now in Turkey, which is undervalued. And I think that's why we've seen transfers like Merih Demiral and Cengiz Ünder go to Italy and do quite well.
Fantastic, Emre. I can't thank you enough. You were an incredible first guest for us during the transfer window, filled us in with a lot of knowledge. I learned a lot. I hope so did our listeners. So definitely follow Emre on Twitter. Again, you guys know the handle is on the description of the podcast, but also it's at Turkish_football1. You can read him on occasion on The Guardian, Bleacher Report, but he posts his own articles, which are terrific. So Emre, thank you so much for joining me on Calcioland. I look forward to talking with you again later this summer.
Thanks very much.
I really enjoyed that. Good stuff there from Emre. I learned a lot. I imagine many listeners did as well. Now, speaking of listeners, let's move on to a segment where the listeners are very, very involved. And that, of course, would be Twitter questions. We got a lot of good Twitter questions. Of course, we got a handful that are focused on transfers, which is pretty normal this time of year. So let's jump right in. David, first Twitter question. What did you make of Paratici's quotes about the next Juventus manager and his denial that they had contacted Pep Guardiola?
Yeah, it was funny because you texted me about this on Sunday right after it happened. So for those that didn't read them, so basically Paratici forcibly denied the rumors on Guardiola, saying he's under contract. We never contacted him. We don't understand how this story even came out. It's very, very odd. Interestingly, one of my Twitter followers replied to me, the fact that a manager is under contract hasn't stopped Juve from pursuing managers in the past. Sarri, who still is the favorite for the job, of course, is under contract. And my Twitter follower brought up that Juve had done the same with Capello when he was at Roma and brought him on after he had won the Scudetto at Roma. So interesting point, but the key difference here is Sarri and Chelsea both want to part ways. Capello wanted to leave Roma. Roma would have liked it to keep him, but he wanted to leave. But I take Guardiola at his word, and I believe the reports that he had no intention of leaving Manchester City and that Manchester City had no intention of letting him leave. So when you have both parties on the same page there, it makes it really hard to break that contract. So maybe it's true that Juve made no contact, but I never really believed that Guardiola was very realistic for Juve. So we're left with Sarri as the leading candidate. But Paratici also said that, you know, we have clear ideas, but we have to wait for all competitions to end. So you could take it as the Europa League for Sarri, but also the Champions League for Klopp and Pochettino. And look, you know, it's possible that if whoever wins that final feels that he can't top it and would like to leave the club. So as Di Marzio reported today, it's possible that Juve tries if Klopp wins, to reach out to him, or if Pochettino wins, to reach out to him, because at that point, maybe those managers feel that they want to leave on top. So short of that, I think Inzaghi is the backup option, but way backup. But I would say Sarri right now is the clear favorite. And I think in some ways, Paratici's quotes kind of confirm that.
This has just been, it's been fun, I guess that's one word, or it's just been crazy and hectic and full of drama, this coaching carousel, everybody reading into literally every quote from Maurizio Sarri, from Pep Guardiola, from Pochettino, yep, from everybody at Juventus. This has been next level attention to just specific words, and then also specific attention to things that maybe weren't said, like Sarri not necessarily denying Juventus like other managers and people have. So, whew, this is just fun, I guess. All right, David, next Twitter question. Could Fabio Quagliarella really head back to Napoli?
I wouldn't exclude it. I mean, Napoli really needs a feel-good story. The relationship between De Laurentiis and the fans there is really pretty poor. Quagliarella is from Castellammare di Stabia, is the leading goal scorer in Serie A. He's had, you know, up and down history with Napoli, if you remember the Stalker case last season. But I think even for him, after the season he had at Sampdoria, going to get one more run in the Champions League would make sense. I also think Napoli still believe in Milik. They have Mertens, but they could use another central striker to alternate with Milik and kind of groom him. So I wouldn't exclude it altogether. Plus, Napoli and Sampdoria have an excellent relationship. I think, you know, it really comes down to if Quagliarella is willing to go back. I think it could make sense for all involved. While we're on the subject of Napoli, they also are on the verge of acquiring a player we've been talking a lot about on the podcast, and that is Empoli wingback Di Lorenzo, who could be a pretty intriguing option at right back. I think that would make Trippier no longer really a target for Napoli. So let's see what else Napoli does, but they have been pretty active, even as our friend Emre said on Turkish Football. I always find them a really fascinating team on the transfer market.
All right, well, staying on Napoli, David. Napoli has the fifth highest wages and finished comfortably in second place. So can we push back on the idea that they underachieved this season?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it that way, it's hard to argue against that. I think in some ways, though, Napoli are victims of their own success and the fact that Milan and Inter just haven't been what they used to be in the past. So I think it makes their result maybe not as intriguing. And look, you know, yeah, they still finished second. They didn't come close to competing against Juve. I think if you could point to them underachieving, it's in the Europa League. And there, I don't think their wage bill was maybe, I mean, obviously, except for the PL teams, but I think squad-wise, what was left when they were eliminated in the Europa League, maybe you could say they overachieved there. In Serie A, obviously, the gap with Juve was much bigger, but I think almost anyone could have expected that. There'd be a little bit of a hangover there. So I think the listener makes a good point, but I think it's also safe to say that we could have expected more from them in Europe.
All right, going back to managers, David, what are the odds Spalletti joins Milan?
I think very low, because when you look at where the direction Milan's going, like with young players, getting them to improve and then selling them, you know, which is kind of depressing if you think of Milan in those terms. But I think that's what we're going to see at least for a year or two. Spalletti really isn't the guy for that. Obviously, you could get Gasperini. That would be great. Gianpaolo from Sampdoria has been linked to them as a possibility. I personally would like to really see De Zerbi at this point, you know, short of them getting, obviously, if you couldn't get Spalletti or Pochettino or something like that, you do it. But I don't think Milan's at that stage. So I think it's realistically going to be more someone in the Di Francesco, Gianpaolo, De Zerbi realm, especially if they really want to go with this youth movement. On the bright side, I think all of them would be more intriguing options than Gattuso. I consider all of them upgrades as much as I do like Gattuso as a person.
Mm. Now, staying on Milan, now that Milan are out of the Champions League, which players are most likely to leave?
Well, one's definitely Bakayoko. We're recording this Monday evening. He posted something on Instagram that really feels like a goodbye to Milan fans, them not being in the Champions League. makes it much harder to redeem him. Like, look, you know, he was really one of their best players. I think finding someone of his caliber for the amount that Milan would have to pay would be very hard to find. But they need to find someone who will be Bakayoko before he is Bakayoko, so they can, you know, bring up his value. So I think he's definitely one. I think Donnarumma, with his salary and the fact that he's a homegrown player and you can make a full plusvalenza on him, basically you're making a pure profit on him. Like, this is completely hypothetical, but if you sold Donnarumma for 50 million or if you sold Piontek for 50 million, this is just hypothetical. With Donnarumma, it's basically a 50 million profit. With Piontek, it's like 23 million with the amortized value of what they acquired him for. So I think he makes sense. Also, his wages are huge, getting him off the books. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes abroad. Suso, also because they acquired him on a Bosman, has a really low base, so they can make a big profit. So those are the ones that I would look at. Romagnoli said that he's staying at Milan. I take him at his word. I think he is going to be one of the players that they build around. So for now, I'm going to say Bakayoko, Donnarumma, and Sousa.
Okay, let's go to Antonio Conte. Do you think he'll be given a big war chest to challenge his former club, Juventus?
So, you know, it was really interesting when there was the roller coaster in the last match for Inter. I was asking myself, you know, in some ways, would Conte prefer that Inter not make the Champions League so he comes in completely as the savior? It's the same situation as when he inherited Juve and Chelsea, won the title the first year, didn't have to worry about Champions League and really focus on the league. The flip side is him going to the Champions League. They're going to have more money to spend on the transfer market. They are out of financial fair play, but they do have to make a plusvalenza, I think, of 40 million. They could probably do that by selling young players and maybe one or two of the veterans, but nothing crazy. But after that, they are be able to spend much more freely. So I think there's a pretty good, I don't think Conte would have gone there without some assurances there to be able to come closer to Juve. So I'm going to say that with the Champions League, odds are he will be able to spend pretty significantly.
Just thinking now, if Maurizio Sarri and Antonio Conte were the managers of Juventus and Inter, respectively, it could be a lot of fun for Chelsea fans. But let's stay on Inter. We haven't talked about this player in a while, David. Could Gabigol be part of Inter's future?
Well, first off, just to piggyback on what you said with Sarri and Conte, I think any manager, I mean, unless it's like Klopp or someone like that, with Allegri gone makes it maybe slightly less likely that they dominate Serie A as much. I think with Allegri, at least you give them that. And with Conte, Inter gets closer. So I'm pretty excited because I think the gap is shrinking. And also, let's not forget Napoli and all this that have a lot going on. So I'm pretty excited for Serie A. So back to Gabigol, the listener that sent it in pointed out that he's doing well in Brazil. I just don't see him coming back to Inter. It was really a very tough spell for him. I think they're pretty loaded at the attack, which we'll get to in a second. So no, I don't see a role for Gabigol there. But good that he's playing well. Maybe Inter can somehow make a profit on him, which would help him get to that 40 million that we talked about earlier. I think they see him more as an asset, and if he plays well, they look at it as something that they can make money on.
Okay. David, with Inter in the Champions League, is it more likely that they now land Romelu Lukaku, and which Inter players could be offered to Manchester United in exchange for him?
Yeah, definitely if in the Champions League makes it more likely that they could get a player like Lukaku. Like, look, the striker situation at Inter, though, is really interesting to me because we know Icardi doesn't want to leave. Definitely his value, especially after that match, you don't want to be a prisoner of the moment. But this second half of the season was absolutely disastrous for him. So how much has his value shrunk is significant. Does Inter gamble that he can get going? Again, we know they like Lautaro Martinez, who I think is a pretty nice fit for Antonio Conte. And Lukaku, yeah, Inter definitely at the moment look like the favorites to land them. Them being in the Champions League certainly makes it more likely. We've talked about it in a previous podcast. Lukaku changed agents, went from Raiola, who really never does business with Inter so far, to Pastorello, who is very close to Inter. So I definitely think it could be possible. And it is possible that a player goes in exchange. I know for a fact it's not going to be Milan Skriniar, so don't get excited, Man United fans. Skriniar signed that extension on his own without an agent. I don't see that happening. Maybe Cardi, but I have a hard time seeing Wanda agreeing to move to Manchester. Maybe. I mean, it is a very prestigious club where he could potentially play. I think Ivan Perisic is possible. We know he's been linked to the Premier League, linked to Man United in the past. At least he had a pretty good end to the season. I would imagine Inter would have to add funds since Lukaku is younger. So I'm going to say Skriniar, definitely no. Icardi, pretty unlikely. Perisic, pretty likely, unless it's just a cash deal.
Okay. All right, let's move on to a player that is just all over the headlines in terms of his future. David, what is the latest on Matthias De Ligt's future?
Man, been bombarded with questions on De Ligt. So look, you know, a lot of people ask me, why aren't we tweeting about it? Me, Gianluca, and Fabrizio. It's like, you know, keep in mind, this is a player in the Dutch league who has, he was linked to Juve in the past. They think Juve is now off the table, not an option for him. And now he's been mainly linked to Barcelona and Man United. So, you know, those are in Serie A, and he's not a Serie A player. So that's why you don't see too much news. But as it stands now, to me, I see it as, you know, Barcelona has the big advantage that they already have an agreement with Ajax. They have a great relationship with them. They just already got De Jong. I would imagine De Ligt would be pretty happy with that move there. But it seems like Barcelona, who I don't think have a long-standing relationship with Raiola, having a hard time agreeing with him on both the wages and his exorbitant fee. I'm sure Raiola is looking for very significant agency for such a young player that a team can build around for so long. So maybe Raiola's using Man United as leverage to get a higher price from Barcelona. You could take it that way, but I see it as Barcelona closer to has an agreement with Ajax and Man, but not yet with the player, and Man United could be used there, or maybe they're trying to get in there. The other player that has been linked to Man United that to me makes more sense now is João Félix. I think with Allegri gone at Juve, I think there's more chances of Dybala staying. João Félix have been linked to Juve, so maybe, I know it's a completely different position for De Ligt, but maybe that is a development that is much more positive for Man United.
Two absolute studs, that's for sure. But when you're Matthias De Ligt, what's the rush when literally every team in the world would take you? I don't think there's a team in the world that would not take him and probably start him. So what a feeling that must be. How about another player that it seems like a lot of teams would just take no matter who is in that position? That would be Luka Jovic. David, with Luka Jovic admitting just recently that Serie A would suit him well, what team could be a logical destination?
So I personally still think he's going to Real Madrid. And if he doesn't, I'd have a hard time seeing him in Serie A, because if he doesn't go to Real Madrid, it probably means that there was a very significant bidding war involving Premier League teams. So I don't see Serie A, but hypothetically, it'd be a great replacement if Inter wanted to move on from Icardi and they did, and they felt like Lautaro Martinez more of a complementary striker. I like Milik, but Jovic is probably an upgrade over him. I think he'd fit in very nicely at Napoli, and he looks like an Ancelotti type striker. So I would say those two, but my guess is, as much as I'd like to see him in Serie A, I don't think that's going to happen. Okay, and now let's get to our final guest, our friend Matt Santangelo. As I said at the top, we did record this before the news broke on Gattuso, so just take that with a grain of salt. This is really more of a review of Milan's season. So I'm very excited to be joined by our next guest, Matt Santangelo. You guys know him very well. He's been on the podcast many times. I really appreciate him doing this because we're recording this on Monday. It's a holiday for both of us in the U.S., so I appreciate him doing it. You guys know he's a big Milan guy after yesterday. Not exactly the easiest circumstances. So for those of you not familiar for what Matt does, he is the co-host of an excellent podcast called State of Play Pod. You can read him on Football Italia, These 40 Times, Gentleman Ultra. He's also been featured in The Guardian on Roma's English site. He is the co-founder of AC Milan Bros. Just a fantastic, great guy. You can often hear him on SiriusXM with Tony Meola and all the guys there. So, Matt, it's a real pleasure. I know this is rough circumstances for you, but I really appreciate welcoming you back to Calcioland.
David, it's great to be back on. Thanks for having me. I know it's a tough time, but, you know, things go on and you got to talk about what happened with the season. So I'm ready to go when you are.
Sounds good. Okay, Matt. So let me set the stage yesterday. I was gone for the weekend. I went to Foxwoods with my better half. We were coming back, and thanks to the magic of the ESPN Plus app, I got to watch all the remaining games in Serie A yesterday, which was really wild. So tell me a little bit, you know, maybe not so much the circumstances, but more the emotional roller coaster. You're a big Milan guy. At halftime, things looked really good. Then Inter scores, then Empoli ties, and it was wild. But I want to hear from you, because more than me, you really had a horse in this race. So tell me a little bit about the emotional roller coaster you went through yesterday.
So yesterday I was I took the trip to Brooklyn Bay Ridge to meet up with Marco and Michael Contaris from IFTV. Everyone, I know you guys are listening, are very familiar with what they do and been pretty much bringing that Calcio community together. So having that, sharing that experience with them was very fascinating. We had pretty much four TVs going on. We had some games with the relegation battle as well, which was very important, obviously, with four teams, I believe, involved in that thing as well. So it was drama filled. It was chaotic. You know, we were all screaming, going back and forth. We had a pretty diverse group. Obviously, Marco being a Juve fan didn't have really much a stake in the game, but we had Inter fans, Milan fans involved. So it was pretty tense, and there was a lot going on, obviously, as you know. It was really, for me, the way I watched all the games unfold, it was a tale of two halves for all of them, right? You know, Milan had the 2-0 lead, as you mentioned, over Spal. So they were taking care of business the way they needed to. And I think at the second half, or really before the second half began, was where things started to change for Milan. You could start to see, like, it was going to be one of those things where they took care of the business, but you left it up to other teams to do the business for you to get where you needed to be. And it just didn't happen. Of course, Sassuolo red card in a scuffle at halftime. They played the second half down a guy. So now, of course, Atalanta has the upper hand. And then the Inter-Empoli game was one of the more craziest games I've seen this entire season, because at the end of the game, you could really see how tired and exhausted Inter were. You had a missed penalty or saved penalty, shall I say, on Icardi from Dragowski.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of kept them in it. And then eventually, Raja Nainggolan, a guy who has been associated with that Zaniolo thing the entire season, scores the goal to get them into the Champions League. It had all the makings of what you want from a final day of a football season. Unfortunately, again, as a Milan fan, it didn't work out the way we wanted it to, but it gets me back to my point. You know, you drop too many points, things happen, and you can't leave it up to everybody else to do your business.
Very well said. And I have to tell you, too, I think the fact that Atalanta played their last two home matches, essentially away matches, and the last one being a real away match since it was in Sassuolo Stadium, that's very well said, and I agree with you there. So now let's look more big picture at Milan this season. When you look at all their performances, the fact that I think they had the second or third highest payroll in the league, and the way they played and whatnot, would you say that they deserved to go to the Champions League? I know the last matches were really kind of wild. But when you look at the whole spectrum of the season, would you say they deserve to go over one of the teams that did?
I don't. You know, at parts of this time in the season, I was like, you know, they really do deserve it, because you know Gattuso had to deal with the injuries, Higuain, everything that kind of went on during the season. It was another roller coaster season, right? And then you found them, you kind of got through that. They had that great spell midway through the season, but then the wheels fell off, dropping points to teams that they just can't drop points to. And this was unlike last year, where you had, you know, Juve, Napoli, Inter, Roma, and Lazio all have great starts that kind of put Milan in a difficult position because they had a terrible start. You felt like this was the one season that if they were going to do it, this is the season it had to be. It was very wide open. Roma, Lazio couldn't get everything together. Inter had their ups and downs as well. And Milan was high as third. So this was the season for them to really pull it off. And again, you know, you can't drop points to some of the clubs that they did. And for me, I think, you know, getting top four, it's not something that is handed to you. You got to really earn it. And for me, deserving,
I wouldn't say they were deserving of it. The teams that got into Champions League were the ones deserving of it. Atalanta have been sensational the entire season. Credit to them finishing third, their first Champions League appearance in their history. And Inter, despite all the things that they had to deal with Icardi, the captaincy switching, and Spalletti under the hot seat, they got the job done and they're in the Champions League. And of course, they're probably going to get Conte if rumors are true as well. So I think the way that it's shaped up, those are the teams that ultimately deserve it. And Milan just dropped too many points at pivotal moments.
Good. Well, I think you have a very fair perspective on this one. So now let's talk about Gattuso. So look, you know, I try to look at it big picture. You know, there was ownership changes, different directors over him. He dealt with the Higuain mess. We know last fall there were a ton of injuries. Then in January, he had to integrate, you know, the new players that came in. He comes up, you know, just short of a Champions League spot. I think this has been, though, however, standing-wise, the best result Milan has had in a few years. At the same time, you know, he definitely has his limitations. So let's look at it this way. When you look at Gattuso this season, do you see him more as an asset to the team, or were his limitations ultimately made him more of a liability?
I think this is one of the this is one of the most difficult questions to answer, because, you know, the way the season was shaping up, it almost allowed Milan to dream and be like, we can get top four, right? Because of everything that happened with some of the other clubs around them. But if you really look at it, there was a lot of people that were saying, were they really a top four team? Was Gattuso really a manager that we should have expected to get us top four? And I think that's what you also have to look at too. Obviously, you mentioned he has his limitations as a manager. He's still growing. Even when he took over the job for Montella last season, midway, he did some good things, but you could start to see with some of the defeats and some of the losses that they had, the drop points that they had, that maybe this job was a little bit too big for him, and he was more of an interim guy to kind of bridge the gap into a different era with a more experienced, more polished manager in terms of the tactic side of things. So I won't say he was a completely a liability. I think he did some good things with this club at certain times in delicate phases where he motivated certain players to play better. But at the same time, you know, you got to look at two sides and say, yes, but you can see in certain matches where it's not that he dropped points against certain clubs like a Juve or Napoli. That's not where you lose sight of your objectives. It's where you show your limitations against teams where you shouldn't be sitting back. You shouldn't be, you should be the aggressor in a lot of those situations. And that he simply just wasn't. Even the game against Jesse was a perfect example, a microcosm, if you will, of the season under Gattuso. 2-0 lead, they're flying high. They're in the position they need to be. All of a sudden, they concede two goals, and they almost let that one slip away. And it would have been one of those cases where, look, they couldn't even take care of their own business. So what makes you think that they deserve it? So it's kind of tough to say. I think maybe thinking about it in another week or 2 weeks after the season to reflect will probably give me a better perspective. But I think it's right now, I'll probably lean more towards liability than the asset, just for the simple fact that he's really not cut out for this job to take this team into Champions League and to be a real legitimate contender for honors each and every year.
So let's keep talking about Gattuso. I have kind of two more questions tied to them, but I kind of wanted to get, you know, your perspective on the first part first. So now I want to ask you, and I asked my Twitter followers this yesterday, do you need to know who the replacement for Gattuso is before you say you want him gone or not? Do you think there are some names that you're like, hey, geez, you know, maybe we should just have kept Gattuso, which I think maybe some Juve fans are feeling about Allegri now when you see some of the names linked to them? Or you just, when you look at his limitation, and I freely admit, as much as I really like Gattuso and think he's done a good job with a lot of things, he clearly has so much that you're like, you know what, I want a fresh start with someone else?
I think it's clear that they need a fresh start. And I think they need a fresh start away from a manager who has ties to the club. You know, Shevchenko's come out and said, I would love to coach Milan one day. I mean, as much as I love Shevchenko, like, that can't happen right now. They got to go with someone who's more experienced, David. And, you know, when you get that manager, you got to understand that you got to get a certain quality of player to go with that manager. And if you're a guy like Gattuso, or you're the management at this point, which is kind of, you know, it has its own difficulties in understanding who's going to be in charge next season, right? With Leonardo possibly being on his way out, you got to have the manager that you can really entrust your transfer window with. And I think that's a very key thing that people tend to overlook, is that well, we need to, if we keep, we could do so, we need to spend. Yeah, but you're not going to spend on a manager who's not the fit and can't get the most out of that talent anyway. So I think for me, it's one of those things where I think you have to get a new manager in there, a fresh ideas, someone who could be a little bit more attacking minded. That's what's ultimately going to, I think, get Milan back to where they need to be. I tweeted something out yesterday about Gasperini on Atalanta, is that Milan conceded 10 goals less than them, 10 goals than Atalanta. But Atalanta scored 22 more, and obviously we know they were the top club, top scoring club in Italy this season. That's the way the mentality has to be now, is be a little bit more attacking-minded. We've seen times where Atalanta go down, and all of a sudden they come back and they pour 3 goals on you, and you look at the team, and you see why they deserve to be where they are. So that's what I would like to see from the next manager. And I think Gattuso is just a little bit too pragmatic. And he at times this season, you really saw that he was he didn't really know what to do when he had a lead with it. He can come back and get leads and change ties like that to get a draw if he needed to. But when he had the lead, I think he was just scared to make a mistake. And that's what ultimately opens you up, and that allows for goals to come in.
Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about potential replacements for Gattuso. Let's maybe try to be a little bit realistic. I mean, I personally think someone like Pochettino, someone like that, might be a little bit far-fetched. If you feel otherwise, that's of course perfectly fine. But of more realistic candidates, and I'm going to throw in Gasperini on that, although I personally think he's staying at Atalanta. There's a lot of buzz for Roma, but we can keep him in the conversation. Any other candidates kind of along the Gasperini lines that you would be fully in favor of bringing in over Gattuso?
It's tough, right? Because you look at how many clubs need managers, right? Juve are looking, they're normally, they haven't been really looking. They've had a good stable bench over the with Conte and Allegri, of course. But you're looking at all the managers, top clubs that need managers, and you start to look down the list and you get down the pecking order and like, who's really available that's going to be an upgrade over Gattuso? Because remember, you still got to pay Gattuso. He's underbooked until 2021. I've heard people, you know, mentioned, or rumors, shall I say, about Di Francesco. For me, I would keep Gattuso at that point. I don't think that Francesco is the guy that you're going to, you'll give the money to get the guys he needs. I know what he did with Roma. I understand that. But we also saw what happened this past season. For me, I don't know really which guy to go with. As you touched on, I don't believe a Pochettino is a realistic option. I think if he's going to leave a team that got to the Champions League final and could possibly win it, he's going to go for a bigger project. And obviously Juve would be an option. But Juve have really their choice of who they want. Pep, Pochettino, Maurizio Sarri, who I would love at Milan for everything I just mentioned in the previous question, as a guy who can really change the dynamic, change the philosophy, and get Milan back to being a more progressive attacking team. But he's also a guy that requires several windows to construct his project. So it's going to be really fascinating to watch to see how this managerial situation unfolds at Milan. In terms of managers, I'll be honest with you. I don't know who I would really pinpoint at this time because there's not many options out there. Simone Inzaghi looks like he could be even getting an extension at Lazio. So who do you go with, right? That's if you're going to sack Gattuso and continue to pay him, then you got to be damn sure that you're getting upgrade. And the list is pretty slim at this point of guys who I think are realistic.
I'll tell you, Gasperini to me would be great. Other than him, the one I'd go for, if I had to gamble, would be De Zerbi, at least with him. He's really the opposite of the limitations we see with him. But that's really more of a guess than anything else. So now let's talk, and again, important, we're recording this on Monday. There could be more developments announced after we record this, so I'm going to keep this more on opinion more than lose. There's been a lot of talk that Leonardo is leaving Milan. I think it's certainly more likely than not. Are you in favor of him leaving? Do you think, you know, obviously Mirabelli left after 1 year. I think we can both agree that's a pretty different than Leonardo situation. But, you know, are you in favor of him being replaced with someone else?
I'm not. I think that Leonardo came into a difficult situation late last summer with all the changes going on with those at the top, and he didn't have the opportunity. He did. I think he had a pretty solid transfer window, all things considered. He got some pieces that I think were good, and given the circumstances, they really couldn't spend that much. Getting Bakayoko on a loan, Castillejo being able to work out something with Villarreal, get Carlos Bacca out of the club, and of course Higuain and Caldara. So I think he did a pretty good job, and I wanted to see him get a full clean slate summer to work on the market, do what he does best, and he even got, of course, Piontek and Paqueta. So I think the signs are there that he really can do great things with this club. But it's one of those things where, you know, if you're a guy who continuously reads into what the media is putting out, that merely apparently him and Gazidis don't see eye to eye on many things, which is kind of why there's a possibility of them parting ways. And there's links, of course, to Luis Campos is a sporting director, I believe, at Lille or Monaco, one of the two. I'm not quite sure on that front, but it looks like they are looking. Lille.
Yeah, he's
okay.
At Lille.
And I know, Lille is I guess, owned by Elliott, if I'm correct in saying that, David.
That I'm not 100% sure, but he's definitely, I would say he's the favorite if they replace Leonardo.
Right. So people are, you know, they're going to make those connections there and say, well, he's going to go there, be the sporting director. And look, I don't know much about Lille, but I know they do have some quality players on that team. But it's always different when it's at a club like Lille and at a club like Milan. There's just immediately more pressure on you to produce, and now more than ever with them not being in the Champions League. So I wouldn't want to see Leonardo leave, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did, because it seems that there is a disconnect at the top. And with him maybe not being able to do as much on the market as he wanted or Milan fans hoped by, you know, assuming they got the Champions League objective, I think it's one of those cases where it's, you know, him, he's going to leave after a season and go elsewhere where he can be more effective and have more of a say in what goes on with the market.
So now let's talk about the players. Let's end on this. So the season just wrapped up. If you had to pick the three best players on Milan this season, and you can also pick the ones that arrived in January, who would you pick and why?
My top three players, I'm probably going to stick with three guys who were there the entire season. Although I do think Piontek and Paqueta did bring great things to this club at a delicate time where they needed a striker who can get goals in. They needed a midfielder who can bring that balance, bring that attacking mind. That they lost when Bonaventura went out. I'm going to go with guys who have been here for the entire season. And in no order, I'm going to go with these three. Is Alessio Romagnoli taking the captain's armband, a guy who we thought would be partnered with Bonucci for at least a couple years. He leaves. He's, again, put in position where he needs to be put with someone else. And he was the best defender for Milan the entire season, wearing that armband as well, and which obviously takes great pride and a lot of responsibility. And he did it with great success, and he took it in stride. So he would be one of my guys. Donnarumma, fantastic. All the pressure on him to possibly, maybe being sold to alleviate some of the financial fair play concerns. He was fantastic the entire season. He improved in certain aspects of his game with his distribution and footwork. And obviously, we saw how important he was down the stretch with some of the saves he made to keep Milan in this race for top four. And then my third guy, despite the criticism he has gotten a lot of times during the season for maybe going missing at certain points, I think Suso has been one of Milan's best performers. Maybe, you know, he could have done a little bit more in terms of the stats. But overall, he's one of the first players, I believe, since Antonio Cassano in 2011-2012, to have 10-plus assists. So he had a great season. I think those guys were the top three performers for Milan. But you can definitely make a shot for Piontek coming in the way he did to score goals, two of them in which he knocked out Napoli with. And Paqueta obviously was missed down the stretch with the suspension. But I think I'm comfortable with the three. Romagnoli, Donnarumma, and Suso.
Very interesting. Okay, let's close on this. Who was the biggest disappointment on Milan this season, in your opinion?
Biggest disappointment on the club would probably be Hakan. And the reason why I say Hakan is because I think, you know, there was a lot of pressure coming on him to when he came in to Milan wearing the number 10 shirt as this guy who could be a threat from set pieces. We saw how he kind of struggled a little bit under Montella last year. And then when Gattuso came in, he immediately changed him and he came like a much better, much improved player, the player that Milan thought they were getting from Leverkusen. So that kind of gave a lot of fans hope going into the next season that, hey, you know, we have a guy who's creative, who can maybe get a 10-plus assists, who can score goals, who's going to be a big influence on this team and what they're trying to achieve. And he just didn't put the numbers that I hoped he would. I think he had some good games down the stretch for Milan, but I expected more from him. And you could even say it from, you know, there was a quote before the game or a couple of days before the game yesterday or 2 days ago on Sunday, that, you know, I think even Gattuso, you know, they kind of see eye to eye on many things. And I think Gattuso expected more from him this season. And I think the same thing can be said about him. And really, that would be my belief on that. And if I'm going to go with a second guy, it would probably be Frank Kessié, a guy that you consistently get that criticism again as a player who has all the ability, but when he gets into the final third, he just doesn't know what to do. He doesn't make that final decision that's going to ultimately end in the best decision and possibly a goal. He could also be being sold as well. So it's one of those things too, where there was a lot of players who had opportunities to grow as a player and play a big role in Milan getting top four. And I think they just didn't do enough to keep their status on this club. And you know, I could see big changes at the club this summer with a lot of these players and these two specifically.
Very well done, Matt. I really enjoyed speaking with you today. Thank you so much for making time on a holiday after such a disappointing day for Milan. Great job, everyone. Follow Matt. Check out the State of Play podcast. It's fantastic. All his articles on his various platforms are great. So thanks so much for hopping on, Matt. And I look forward to chatting with you later on.
Thanks a lot, David. Have a good rest of your weekend.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the CalcioLand podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen to an enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.